This season, let your shoes do the talking. Designer Shoe Warehouse is packed with fresh styles that speak to your whole vibe without saying a word. From cool sneakers that look good with everything to easy sandals you'll want to wear on repeat, DSW has you covered. Find a shoe for every you from the brands you love, like Birkenstock, Nike, Adidas, New Balance, and more. Head to your DSW store or visit DSW.com today.
Question for our listeners. Which automaker assembles the most vehicles in the country? Here's a hint. It's the same one that employs the most hourly workers in the country, and the answer is Ford. That's not a coincidence. It's a commitment. A commitment your local Ford stores share. And that is why Ford is now offering employee pricing across their full lineup of vehicles, which means you pay what they pay. So visit your local Ford stores today to take advantage of this great opportunity. Ford Motor Company. From America, for America.
Going up. Prices keep going up these days. It feels like being on an elevator that only goes up.
Going up.
But not at Metro. We're pushing the down button.
Going down.
We've lowered prices. Get one line of 5G data for $40, period. That's 20% lower. And you get a free Samsung 5G phone when you bring your number. Only at Metro.
5-year guarantee on eligible plans. Exclusions apply. See website for details. Not available at Metro with T-Mobile in the past 6 months. Tax applies.
Now, from Wichita's most listened to sports radio, 97.5 and 1240 KFH, this is Sports Daily with Jacob Albrock and Tommy Gester.
And we are back with you for another edition of Sports Daily, and we're glad to be here on a Thursday. It is Albrock and Caster, Max Powers producing for us as we are getting you ready to head down the home stretch of this week, get ready for the weekend. We've got contests for you, all kinds of ways to get in touch with the program. You could do it by calling us at 869-1240. You can do it by leaving us comments on our video stream. Thanks to those of you watching on 12 News Connected. Thanks to those watching on Facebook, YouTube, X. You can comment to us all those places. And you can leave voice messages through the Odyssey app. You go to the app if you're listening to us there, which is a great way to take in the program. And you click the little microphone button. You leave us a voice message. Max can get that right out over the air. Tommy, good morning. How are you?
I'm good. It's a good day. It was a good evening last night. I do, though, have to admit that I remember saying, I think it was yesterday or maybe 2 days ago, that I wasn't all that excited about the Knicks and Pacers series.
You are now.
And then Tyrese Halliburton had something to say about that last night. That was quite a finish in that game.
I can't believe it got to that point. I was kind of in and out, and then I got back in right at the end there. And man, it was so perfect. The choke gesture, I was like, man, I've seen that before. I've seen that. And I'm like, oh my God, that's Reggie Miller at Madison Square Garden. Yeah. Like, it was just so, like, such a, like, a beautiful historian's take on that series.
Cinema.
And it just
cinema, it right set, there.
It sets into motion perfection for that series. Now we're all in, right? And Halliburton's good at that. Like, he's really good at finding those things. And the NBA, I mean, honestly, the NBA needs it. The NBA needs guys to step into that role, the quote-unquote villain role, and Reggie Miller for the Pacers was so good at it. Like, that was perfection. Now, of course, he didn't actually win the game there on that right shot. They needed to go get it done in overtime, which was fine.
The only thing I thought about after he did that and they realized that his foot was on the line and they didn't win the game was, man, the Pacers have to win this game now. Like, if they don't, like, that completely is a major blunder from Halliburton. But it's they obviously got it done in overtime and take a 1-0 lead.
And they were down big and they came back. So it'll be interesting to watch that series now. It seems destined to go long, right? It seems destined to go into 6 or 7 games one way or the other. So I'm happy for it. I'm happy for that kind of drama. I'm happy for those kinds of moments in the postseason because that's what we remember, right? Like, those are the things that stick with us as we make our way through history. And the Pacers are right there. And they'll obviously now definitely have a shot in the series. But the Knicks are in a little bit of danger here. Pressure's on them in game two. That was great. Royals played day baseball yesterday. And there are things there that we could look back at that game in San Francisco and be like, okay, Like, here we go. And we'll get into that as we make our way through it today. But a lot, you know, a lot we can look at on a small scale in baseball. And if you could just get a little bit of that to carry through, the Royals are going to be in real good shape. But you got to get to carry through. And they're getting ready with a day off today to head to just a massive early season series against Minnesota. So we'll have that for you as well. Tim Fitzgerald, our K-State insider, is going to stop by. Good timing for Fitz, because we have the news of this potential college athletics CEO that's been floated out there. And K-State gets a basketball recruit that we're excited for a lot of reasons. And we'll explain why that might be a little bit later as well. Shocker baseball is done. Their season is finished. So what turns out to be, honestly, one of the worst seasons in program history is finally done. And they'll be ready, I'm sure, to turn the page off of this year. I believe it's second most losses in program history on a season they were projected to win or finish second in the league. That's a tough pill to swallow. And so they'll move on to the next one. All kinds of stuff there for you. We're going to give some stuff away. We'll give away some HTO later in the show. So stay tuned for your opportunity to win that. Thank you to Prairie Fire Coffee in the meantime for getting us the cafe. Every time I'm like, you know what? I'm going to bed early tonight. We get Knicks Pacers down to the wire. We get Royals late baseball in San Francisco. So we appreciate Prairie Fire for getting it to us. Jim Irsay died, Tommy. Did you see that yesterday?
I did. Yeah, no, I did. 65 years old. He was one of the more entertaining characters in the NFL as far as ownership is concerned. Usually pretty outspoken. You know, he was usually front and center, kind of along the same lines of Jerry Jones and Al Davis, you know, before he passed away back in the day, and definitely a very colorful character. So, sad news, especially right as, you know, the NFL is doing its owners meetings and, you know, all of that. The owner of the Colts passes away. You buried the lead, though, out of everything that's been going on. The tush push remains in the NFL. You didn't even bring that up to this point.
No, I did mean to bring it up. That's, it'll be where we start.
That's the big thing. I mean, that's the big news, yeah. That the tush push ain't going anywhere.
Yeah, it's not. And we made our stances on it. I would have liked to seen it go. Tommy wanted it to stay, and we kind of settled on it's about a 50-50 chance that the decision will go. If you read about the drama with it, it's pretty wild how it all appeared to have played out. And Jason Kelsey, perhaps in some observers' minds, might have been the guy who pushed it just over the finish line. They were only two votes shy, and it was something. We're going to get into that next segment because we'll have a little more time. We need to discuss it a little further. Let's take this time though on Irsay. NFL owners were at those meetings. He was active, like tweeting earlier in the day. I don't know what happened, but it's certainly sudden. And NFL owners, more I think than any other owners, become characters of the league. Yet another thing I think that the league does really well is allow, and I don't even know that they do it on purpose, maybe it just happens to be these personalities. But we know far more collectively, Tommy, as a society about NFL owners than we do any other sport. Like in baseball, you might know the owner of your own team that you watch, and then that you don't really know or care about anybody else. Same with basketball. But in the NFL, we kind of know all of them. And Jim Irsay was at the forefront of the ones that really can make a headline. And he kind of took his style and he wore it on his chest. And sometimes that rubbed people the wrong way. And, you know, I think if you're a Colts fan, you appreciate the product on the field he was able to produce. However much of that was, you know, Peyton Manning, I think the great achievement were the Manning years. I think the great failure were the Andrew Luck years and the refusal to get Luck protection and the help that he needed. But it was certainly always impactful for a franchise. Maybe they wouldn't be there in Indianapolis otherwise. But, man, the Colts have always been interesting with Jim Irsay.
Yeah, they have. And I wonder what, you know, the future looks like with this team moving forward. I mean, it's been under the control of the Irsay family for a long time, you know, going all the way back to Jim Irsay's father. And, you know, what does that look like for the future of the franchise long term? And, you know, I would imagine that, you know, it goes into, I would think, a trust or a family estate or whatever that is. I don't know I'm not sure. I don't really know Jim Irsay's family, if there's like a next generation or if he's got relatives that will run it. I think that's probably all up in the air at this point. You know, so I look long term at this franchise and what does the stability look like without the guy that's ran the team for the last almost 30 years?
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know. But it's a seismic shift in the NFL. There's only 32 of these individuals that do this, and it's a big deal, when especially unexpected, and it's obviously very sad anytime anybody dies, honestly, in my opinion. So that happened yesterday. So did the Tush Push news. Those are big NFL headlines. Let's take a quick break. We'll come back. We'll get into the Tush Push now. We discussed the play itself and why we thought the league should do one thing or the other. They made their decision. We'll talk about it next. You can chime in on the video streams. You can call us all kinds of different ways. We're coming back with more Sports Daily. Don't go away.
At Designer Shoe Warehouse, we believe that shoes are an important part of, well,
everything. From first steps to first dates, from all-nighters to all-time personal bests.
From building pillow forts to building a life.
For all the big and small moments that make up your whole world, DSW is there. And we've got just the shoes. Find a shoe for every you from brands you love at brag-worthy prices. At your DSW store or DSW.com.
Question for our listeners. Which automaker assembles the most vehicles in the country? Here's a hint. It's the same one that employs the most hourly workers in the country, and the answer is Ford. That's not a coincidence. It's a commitment. A commitment your local Ford stores share. And that is why Ford is now offering employee pricing across their full lineup of vehicles, which means you pay what they pay. So visit your local Ford stores today to take advantage of this great opportunity. Ford Motor Company, from America for America.
Going up.
Prices keep going up these days. It feels like being on an elevator that only goes up.
Going up.
But not at Metro. We're pushing the down button.
Going down.
We've lowered prices. Get one line of 5G data for $40, period. That's 20% lower. And you get a free Samsung 5G phone when you bring your number. Only at Metro.
5-year guarantee on eligible plans. Exclusions apply. See website for details. Not available at Metro with T-Mobile in the past 6 months. Tax applies.
Time to get back to the sports talk.
All right, let's do this thing. Go!
Sports Daily is on KFH.
All right, welcome back in, everybody. I want to tell you about the Odyssey Summer Concert Series. We have events for you here. This will be 8 total weeks, 4 in Andover at the Capitol Federal Amphitheater, 4 in Wichita at the Nafsker Park. They start June 20th. They are Friday nights from 8 to 10 o'clock, and they are free live music. Odyssey Summer Concert Series. Look for the details of that over the coming weeks and set your calendar to it. Go out and get some free live music at a couple great venues. Welcome back into Sports Daily. Tush Push stays, and it was as close as we thought it would be. I mean, I don't know that it was 50-50, but it was only 2 votes shy. It could not have been much closer yesterday to being gone, and it is here, and the Eagles are very appropriately, and Eagles fans are doing a nice job of rubbing that in to the rest of the league. I think that probably all parties need to be commended here. I've told you yesterday, I think it should be gone because I think it's a boring play that takes away from the excitement of the game. I think that owners, when I read some of the comments after the game, like, they were pretty good. Even Jerry Jones, he's like, I have to sit here and weigh, like, do I want to put the Eagles at a disadvantage, or do I actually think this is an unsafe play? I never thought the unsafe play was the right play, by the way. Because as we watch it, we're like, why are they saying that's an unsafe play? Like, I don't recall, knock on wood, anybody ever getting hurt during that play. Like, it's like the least high intensity contact that there is. And so, you know, it's interesting. I think had they not used that strategy, they probably would have had a better chance. But when you're trying to sell it to owners, like, oh, this isn't a safe play, and I don't think there are any doctors or anybody else actually saying that. And then Jason Kelce gets up there and it's like, I could have played forever, you know, if we just ran that play every time. So I thought it was a really interesting process to get there. I don't know if this tables the vote just for one season. I have no idea. But it's here and it's here to stay. So you're not going to stop it. If you're the opposition, you better just learn how to do it yourself. And that's the slippery slope I've been afraid of. I think every team will learn how to do this well, and it will make games more boring. That's what I don't like. But that's what's going to happen.
We had the conversation on Tuesday with our buddy Felix Johnson about the Chiefs and about how, you know, they've kind of been the villain for a number of years in the NFL with their dynasty. And maybe that's starting to turn a corner a little bit. And I think that with the way that the Eagles put together this entire presentation about the tush push yesterday, that kind of solidifies them as the new villains in the NFL. I mean, and I don't know if you followed like or read about Jeffrey Lurie, the owner of the Eagles, and his impassioned presentation about not banning the tush push. He talked for like an hour about it at the meetings, to the point to where I believe it was the owner of the 49ers asked him like how much longer he had to go, because he was like talking forever about it. Like, and tempers got heated, and you know, the drama was kicked up a notch a little bit. And then of course you bring in Jason Kelce, and he becomes kind of the voice of the players, basically saying that he really feels like it needed to stay and stick around. And I think that it did sound like some of the owners, you know, resonated with what Jason Kelce was saying at the presentation. Like, the Eagles did a pretty masterful job of really, you know, giving their case out to the other owners and basically showing why they don't want it to be banned. But at the same time, they did it in a way to where you can look back on it and be like, yeah, they want to be the bad guys in the league a little bit, and they were persuasive enough where they were able to get just enough teams to vote against it, and it remains for another year.
And here we are. I do think – now, have you seen – I have not seen. Like, is it just tabled for a year? Can it be brought back up? Does this solidify it for a little while? I don't know that part of it.
I think it would take another team – next year before owners meetings to put another proposal together.
Yeah. And they're not going to be able to, I don't know what the likelihood, but again, and this is my point with it and why I hoped it would be gone. If it's not going to be gone, everybody's going to learn how to use it, because the Eagles are successful with it 90% of the time. That means basically in 90% of down and two or less to go, they're converting that. It's an unbelievable strategic advantage. Teams will get better at it.
Yeah, but and teams might get better at it, but also it's not just the play itself, it's the personnel. And the Eagles have the right combination of personnel to be able to make it happen. It's not, I mean, Jalen Hurts is phenomenal at it, but it's also their offensive line is huge. Like, they're one of, if not the largest offensive lines in the entire league. And so it's not just a, hey, let's get better at it so we can do it at 90%. You've got to have the personnel too. And not every team has that.
Well, and maybe it becomes 80%, but it'll be a higher percentage, because you're going, what I think will happen, and what I think, what's why I've said for like why the Chiefs did not use Blake Bell, that all, it's not about like finding the quarterback to do it to me. It's about who can take a snap. Like, what fullback do you have? What tight end do you have that can take a snap? And then they'll just do the play instead. Hurts happens to be good at it. Not every quarterback is. I can't imagine.
But don't you think if teams had
back there doing tush pushes?
Don't you think if teams had that personnel, they would have already implemented this? I mean, this is not a new thing.
No.
Like, this is, I mean, teams have been able to do this forever.
It takes the league a little time to adapt and adjust. Think about when Tampa beat the Chiefs in the Super Bowl and how they played them defensively. It took a while for the rest of the league to start doing that, right? Like, it took it because And we saw it, but it was not the next year. It was like the year after that year. That's when we started seeing every team take away the long ball. The league is, it does that, right? All these coaches change and it gets cyclical. Eventually, they're going to be watching that and be like, why aren't we doing this? And so they'll get better at it, and they will. Like the, and so when that happens, my fear and why I wish the play was gone, it's like, well, if everybody does it and everybody's doing it well, we have now eliminated short yardage situations from being an exciting play in the game. It becomes a foregone conclusion that it'll be a conversion. And as a viewer, that's not nearly as fun. The product isn't nearly as fun seeing that play. The tush push is a boring play. Like, you know, it's worse than an extra point almost at this point. You're just like, yeah, whatever. You just kind of don't pay a whole lot of attention to it because you know it's coming. So look, maybe that doesn't happen. That's just a guess from me, but I think it will. And I don't like it because I think the play sucks. It's a boring play. I don't like the play.
You know, Aaron Glenn, the new head coach for the Jets, this was, you know, a couple months ago. He had a quote, and I actually love this mentality. And I feel like all the teams, all the opponents in the NFL, you know, of the Eagles should implement this sort of mentality. He said, and I quote, "They've done a good job creating a play that's unstoppable. In my defensive coaching mentality, my job is to stop that play. Our job is to stop that play." And again, like, they're not banning it. The NFL has made that clear. Like, they didn't get enough votes to ban it. So now it's up to these opponents and these coaches to figure out a way to stop it. I think that's the primary responsibility, not to copy what the Eagles are doing and implement it yourself. Because again, you may not have the right personnel to have that kind of success, that level of success that the Eagles have shown. Like, the Bills run it, but the Bills don't run it with the same level of success that the Eagles do. And so that becomes the key component for these opponents. It's to figure out a way to stop it. And that's what I've said all along. That's the solution. Stop it. If you can put some kind of defensive scheme together, and I don't know what that is. I'm not a defensive guru, but there's got to be some kind of way to, you know, have the kryptonite to Superman. That's the job of these coaches and these teams, to figure out a way to stop it.
So I agree with the mentality should be that. I don't think you can. I think we're to the point with that play now. Over what are we, 3 years into that play or 2 years into that play? You're not going to stop it. It won't be stopped. Like, the physics of it doesn't work. If it's run properly, you can't stop it. Like, that's the point of it, is it's unstoppable. And so, yeah, the priority for teams should be just stop the play. The priority for teams should also be learn how to run the play. And they will. This is the NFL. It's a copycat league. They're going to get better at it. And so all of that to the side is where I stand. Like, I get all of that. And I want my coaches and players thinking that way too. I'm just thinking about it from what's the best thing for the league to do. And that's where I fall into, they should get rid of the play. And it's not like it's unprecedented. We went through it yesterday. They change rules in this league all the time to fit what they want the product to look like. The most egregious is how much contact a wide receiver and a defensive back can make before. Are you kidding me? Like, you've taken those defensive backs and you put them at such a disadvantage. Why? Well, because you want more passing in the game because it's more exciting. And so that's for me. Like, yes, I want Steve Spagnuolo to line up this offseason. Like, how do we try to stop this play 2 out of 10 times instead of 1 out of 10 times? Because we might play that team in the Super Bowl again. And we play them in week 2 this season. I get that's obvious. That's absolutely what needs to happen. And at the same time, if every team's smart, they're going to say, how do we do that? Like, why are we we can do this. Let's figure out how to do it effectively. The Eagles obviously perfected it. We've got an offseason here. I will bet you money that we see more tush pushes from more teams next year than we've ever seen before. I'll bet you money.
You may be right about that. I don't think they're going to be as successful as what the Eagles have done.
Probably not going to be. Again, the Eagles have been doing this now for 2 or 3 years, but it will be a very, very high conversion rate. Very high. Maybe it's not 90, maybe it's 75, but it'll be there. And so it's fine. It's obviously it's here now. We'll just have to watch it. But I don't think any of us are going to sit there and love that it's happening.
I'm fine with it. What I find ludicrous about this entire thing, the rule was changed to allow players to push other players. It's been in place for 20 years. And we're just now having this conversation. Like, it's ludicrous to me. This is not a new rule change that the NFL had experimented with a couple of years ago, and this has been the result, and now they've got to go back on it. This has been in place for a long time. How are we just now dealing with this? Like, I feel like, and again, that's a testament to the Eagles and their offensive prowess for figuring out a way to work within the confines of the rules, what the rules of the game state, to do something that works really well for them. It is a copycat league, but that doesn't mean the success will be replicated from other teams.
It'll take time.
It's going to, I mean, but again, it's also personnel based. Not every team has a Jalen Hurts. So you might have a team that is able to run it at a 70% success rate or whatever it is, but you're not going to, not every team has that kind of personnel to be able to execute it at highest of levels that the Eagles have been able to execute.
So it'll take time to get there. My prediction is they'll find other players to do it besides, again, you're not going to do it with Matt Stafford, right? You'll find a player on your roster. You'll train a tight end how to take a snap properly. Like, that's where, and it'll take time. I think you'll see the attempts and more teams doing it this year. And then I think probably in another year, you'll see a success rate get up there pretty close to where the Eagles are. The only thing that's going to change any of this, by the way, is if there are actual player injuries because of it. That hasn't happened that I know of so far. I don't think that the doctors are backing that up. I think that's just sort of what people make up and say because, hey, player safety, player safety. But you're going to have some hard data for that. And we'll see. Look, we'll see it. Maybe we all love it. Like, maybe this becomes this play that, when everybody's trying it, maybe we do enjoy it. I don't happen to, but maybe others will. This is all opinion stuff. I'm fascinated, though, by the vote, how the vote played out, how close the vote was.
Were you surprised, by the way, about any of the teams that were the ones that voted against it?
No, I don't think so. Obviously, the NFC East needs to vote to ban it.
Voting to keep it. Like, are you surprised by it? The 10 teams that voted to keep it around. Obviously, the Eagles were one of them, but then you had the Ravens, the Browns, the Lions, the Jags, Dolphins, Patriots, Saints, Jets, and Titans. Those were the teams that, according to Adam Schefter, at least, that voted against banning it.
This of that list, the Saints are the one that would stand out to me because they don't have the quarterback type personnel to run it. The Lions are a little interesting, but remember, the Lions have the best offensive line in the game. No offense to the Eagles. So they're probably with Dan Campbell working on something.
Well, and Dan Campbell goes for it all the time anyway. So anything even if they don't do the tush push necessarily, to at least have that in their back pocket.
They will.
As a play to be able to try to convert, because Dan Campbell's going to roll the dice all the time.
They'll be running that play this year. Like, count on it. I don't know who will run. I don't think it'll be Jared Goff, but they're going to run that play. I'll bet you this. Every team that was on that list is working on a way to run that play. The Saints are the one where, like, who for the Saints is going to run that play? Maybe Alvin Kamara can. I don't know. Can running backs take snaps? Like, there are ways to do it. Jalen Hurts, like the Eagles. I don't like the Eagles. The Eagles deserve, I mean, as much credit as you can be given, they deserve it for this because they have created an unstoppable play. And that is insanely awesome for them. I don't think it's insanely good for the league. But it's great for them, and they deserve all the credit in the world for it. They do. They deserve all the credit in the world for what they've done on that roster anyway. Like, I never thought – I like Jalen Hurts. I like his vibe coming out of college. I love his story and how he went and left Alabama. I love all of that. Never thought he was going to be a Super Bowl-type quarterback in the NFL. He's been to two of them now. Nick Sirianni, like, as much as anybody might want to see that guy fail – been to two Super Bowls, and outside of a late season collapse last year, like, they've done nothing but win since he's been there. Their GM, well documented with the work he's done on the roster. Their owner, who was talking all the trash yesterday, since he's taken over that team, there haven't really been any more successful teams than he has with what he's done. So, like, yeah, they deserve all that credit. I don't want to take anything away from the Eagles and all of this, and I'm glad and I hope they continue to wear this like a badge of honor, because they've earned it and they deserve it. And it's good. That is good for the league. That makes it fun. that has nothing to do with it. I just don't want to see every team start running this play well in 2 years, and then we don't have third and ones anymore. Be exciting.
Yeah, I also love the quote from the Steelers owner, Art Rooney, after the vote happened. He said,
an honest answer, you go to old Art.
Right, and I really like what he said. He goes, I don't think it's the end of the world that it's not banned. I was for the ban, but even if we pass the ban, we're still going to have quarterback sneaks in the game. I think more was made out of it than it was. Really, it wasn't as big a deal as we made out of it, which I do agree with that. I think that this has been like really, really like illuminated and a spotlight on it when really, in my opinion, it's not that big of a deal. I think too much has been made out of it. And you know what? Look, like had it been banned, whatever, like you move on, you move forward. But I think a lot of these owners were probably like, and even Jerry Jones, I think, said this to an extent that, you know, it made him think about it. Like, is it really that big of a deal? And ultimately they voted in favor of banning it. The Cowboys did. But at the end of the day, I think that most owners were like, you know what? Look, like this isn't that big of a deal, guys.
I agree. I totally agree. I don't care that much. It became this headline. I think because you had a little like drama element to it with like spite and all of these things, I think that probably made us a little more interested. The tush push alone individually isn't going to win the Eagles a Super Bowl or lose the Chiefs a Super Bowl. It's one piece of it. Like it isn't. I totally agree with that. Like it's not that big a deal. It just became really interesting as the process went on. And now the Eagles, as they're going to milk this appropriately, it will become this fun thing next year that we're watching. It for sure will. Like it's fine. Royals, Tommy, winners yesterday, I should say. 8-4 over the Giants. You love the 8 runs. You love that they backed up a bullpen game. We got the answer, pretty quick that it would just be a bullpen game with Daniel Lynch. We kind of wondered, and it was never really official if he'd be available to pitch more than a regular appearance, but he wasn't. And that tells you pretty clearly that what's going to happen. He'll go right back to the bullpen, and they expect short stays, I would think, from Reagans and from Lugo. So all of that's good. But there's no question, and you can go right back to the show yesterday, what the best thing to come out of yesterday's game was, and that's Salvador Perez not only going 3-for-5, which was great, but getting his first home run in more than a calendar month since April 13th. If all of a sudden he turns it around and like finds it and finds his groove, we will look at this game, the final game on May 21st in San Francisco Day Baseball, as this pivotal, monumentous moment of the Royals season. Now, that could also very easily not happen, and this could be a one-off. But if it does, I mean, that's the kind of impact that is going to have, I think, on this team. Getting his bat back in this lineup in the middle of it to be able to produce runs will be that impactful. It could be a turning point of this season if that can be the spot.
They've got to get him right, and the game yesterday, a really good spot for that. It's a good way to start. I texted you early in the game when I think he was 0-for-1 to start things off, and then he had a single, and I texted you, and I was like, Salvi got a hit. Like, that's all I wanted to see was, like, can he even get a single? And he did, and it was a good at-bat, and he was able to work a single out of it. And then he follows it up with a home run and adds RBIs and all of that, which is fantastic. I think that is extremely important. And the fact that he went 3-for-5, so it wasn't a one-off. It wasn't like he went 1-for-5 and that one hit was a home run. Like he was able to get on base a handful of times. He raised his batting average by 8 points in one game, which is huge, and got his OPS up over 600 again. It's still far away from where the Royals need their cleanup hitter to be. But it is a really good start, and it's just going to be – it's something we've talked about multiple times, whether we're talking about it from an individual point of view with a single player or collectively as an entire group. We've got to see the consistency. So it's good to see the one-off. They scored 8 runs collectively. That's great. Now we need to see them follow it up with another good offensive outing because that's been the issue. They've put up a bunch of runs in games – and then they follow it up with a stretch of games where they don't score at all. So we need to see this, happen a few times in a row to start to feel like, okay, this team is back, or even individually, Salvi is back.
And it also, to me, wasn't a he got turned on an inside fat. Like, it was an opposite field kind of vintage Salvador Perez home run that he was able to muscle out, wasn't the best pitch to even like, but he, you know, that's where he's at his best, right? Because he swings at a lot of pitches. And so, like, all of it, you like, you see it and you're like, oh boy, that felt like old Salvi. Like, that looked like an old Salvi home run where you're like, oh man, swung at a bad pitch, maybe it's a fly ball, and then it's an opposite field home run. And you're like, whoa, he's strong, right? Like, that's so all of that felt really good. He just, and I listened to him after the game, Joel, just his real quick interview on the field with Joel Goldberg, and like his head seems right. You know, the things he's saying and the things that Goldberg, who does such a great job, who's with the team every day, is saying to him about, you know, maintaining that captain status and getting it. And Salvi, like, part of the reason we all love him so much is because he's always having so much fun doing this thing that he's so fortunate to do. And he never seems to take it for granted. And so, like, that attitude, too, I think was good to see. Like, he seems okay in the head. We don't know if he's okay physically. We've wondered about that, right? He's not, he's just not, and he did yesterday. He looked like Salvi. Like, he looked for the first time in a very long time. It's been weeks since we've seen him sign a kind of seam locked in at the plate, and he was yesterday. And this was all, by the way, against Logan Webb. And it also came after they started the game with three straight singles, got a run, and then had three straight strikeouts. Like, that, I was just like, there is not a better microcosm of this season for the Royals than three straight singles, a couple runners on with nobody out, and getting one run out of it. Like, and that's how they started the game. And then, of course, they opened it up and things look great. Mikel Garcia continues to hit at an insane pace. Bobby Witt Jr. is doing his thing, although we're still waiting for his power to pick back up. I suppose the easy, very simple glass half full is, you know, there's more power coming from Bobby Witt Jr. Like, that is a for sure thing. We're pretty sure there is from Salvi because it's been like non-existent. Vinny's never going to be a power guy, but he's at least hitting the ball a little harder. Like, those are your glass half full moments, but they've got to continue it. What was the, and I don't have it in front of me. Like, we dug some numbers. This was the last week, probably. The amount of times they've scored more than four runs, two games in a row this year, is like three or four. It's a stupid small number. It just is very tiny number of times they've been able to go back to back games. And one of them was against Colorado, if you even want to count that, with as bad as they are. So now it's like, okay, that's great. We've seen these one-off offensive performances, and then it's Lucy with the football. We'll have four more games where they scored combined four runs. Now they've got to follow it up. It's almost like I don't want the day off today, right? Like, you don't want the day off to even think about it. Just like, find that groove. But that's the next thing now. Can you do it consistently just for four or five games? Can you get hot for a week? They haven't been able to do any of that.
Well, and from an independent performance perspective, I mean, we talked about Salvi, but I mean, also Michael Massey was 3-for-5. That was good to see.
He did look good yesterday.
You know, Mikel Garcia was in the leadoff spot and Jonathan India got the day off. Garcia was 2-for-4 with two RBIs. And then, of course, Bobby Witt Jr. is 2-for-4. You and I were talking back and forth yesterday also about Witt batting after Garcia and what that might look like with the lineup and all of that. And I know it was a one-off because India got the day off. But, I mean, it certainly, I think it helped Bobby Witt Jr. batting directly behind Mikel Garcia and your two guys that have the highest batting averages on the team going back-to-back at 1-2. And I don't know, I don't think it's probably the right thing to do permanently to have India not bat leadoff, but at least for one game when you needed to kind of spell India, to have Garcia be the leadoff guy.
So here's I text you. I was like, man, what if Bobby Witt Jr. was, because ideally I would still maintain that the ideal spot for Bobby Witt Jr. is as a leadoff hitter, lets you better utilize his speed, which is the best in the game. But then three hole would make a lot of sense. If Garcia, if this holds for Garcia, I think whether you bat him one or two, I would probably bat him one, because India is, if nothing else, you trust him at the plate to get a job done, right? Probably even still a little more than Garcia. Garcia just is a hits machine right now, but Garcia is also really fast. So stealing bases comes back into play. And like, if Garcia is going to hit like this, and his on-base percentage is right now, 377, I believe it's the highest on the team. You could put him, I would say one, India two, let India move him around, do whatever you're going to do. And then you've got Bobby Witt Jr. there to try to drive him in rather than Vinny Pasquantino trying to drive him in immediately. And then you could bat Pasquantino fifth. I think there could be now. I think the chances of that are not likely. We asked the question 1,000 times. Well, why don't they just lead off Bobby Witt Jr. last year? JJ Piccolo himself told us because he doesn't want to. And so there's probably, I would say, a very outside, small, slim to none chance that that happens. So then the other, you know, the other possible outcome there is back Garcia third, right? Let just flip it around a little bit. Just back Garcia third. It does limit your base running a little bit if India gets on and you've got those other two guys that you'd like to be able to run free. But I think that's an alternative that would be okay. But yeah, Bobby Witt Jr. in the three hole with this lineup this year could be something to think about.
It's interesting to me that, you know, you've got a guy that, and we don't talk about him a ton, and he doesn't get all the at-bats. He doesn't play every day. He plays a majority of the games, but not every day. And that's Kyle Isbell, who has batted pretty well in his time.
He's done a really good job.
You know, on the roster, he's got a 286 batting average. His OPS is, you know, 736. I mean, he's been a solid contributor offensively. He's pretty locked into that nine hole, which I think is really, it's interesting to me. And I don't think I don't think it's a bad place for him.
No,
but he's been kind of under the radar, at least offensively, as we focused on players that are not getting the job done and where you could move the lineup around. I think if you had to, I wouldn't be opposed to moving him up in the lineup. I don't think they're going to. I think he's pretty much solidified in the nine hole to turn that lineup card over and to, you know, get things going again. But if you had to, if you needed to go somebody in the six hole or seven spot, like, I would be okay with that. It's just interesting that we haven't really focused on him and his contributions, and he's been really good.
I think I agree, but I'd leave him there. I think what he's bringing defensively, like, you're just ecstatic over the moon right now if you're the Royals. I don't think he does kind of like one thing only, and that's get a single, right? Like, that's pretty much all he's getting, which is great. Like, it's fine out of your nine hole spot. I'm good leaving him there. That's also kind of like, there's a track record here. Like, if there's a law of averages, kind of don't mess with that one. If it's working, I'm not sure I would put him in the same stratosphere offensively as other guys that you'd be more comfortable moving around.
I mean, you mentioned he does one thing, and that's hit singles, but at the same time, out of basically all the everyday players on the roster, he's got the third highest slugging percentage behind Bobby Witt Jr. and Michael Garcia.
That's because all of them only hit singles right now, right? Like, that's been one of the problems of the offense. I just don't think, like, if we look to, like, okay, what, I don't think Isbell's going to be the guy that's going to give them that pop. Here's the other crazy part. So Massey's there. India is kind of that spot. But and Canna, Waters, and Isbell have been a fine outfield. So as we look at it and we see Fermin catch yesterday, the most obvious solve for this team is for Cags to continue to develop and give them power, Jack Caglione. If that happens, it's going to have to be because Salvi catches a lot. I wonder if we don't see Freddie Fermin catch a little more often now, so that Salvi is saved for when they ult, because if they're going to wait until June or July to make that call up, or maybe even later, if you're making that call up and he's not going to play the outfield, which doesn't appear like he is, that means you're going to want Salvi to catch every day. And if you're going to, or play DH, and, well, no, he'd have to catch every day.
He'd have to catch. And then you'd have to have,
so if that happens, save it, right? Like, if you know you're going to try, if you know coming down the stretch of this season and into the postseason, Salvi's going to have to catch, let Freddie Fermin play more now, right? And maybe Salvi gets a day off during every week and all these things once that time comes. But that's another thing, I think, as we're looking at it, that we could watch. It's going to be a minute for Cags has to hit AAA pitching. They obviously want to see him do that before they do anything. So that's one that comes further down the road, certainly. But it was the only time, Tommy, they've had four runs or more, three games in a row, one time. the Rockies series was a big part of that. So
it's a huge series starting tomorrow against Minnesota. So if they need it, if there's a time to back it up, now's the time.
I love it. Yeah, I love baseball so much. I'm so glad that the Royals are good again and have been good now for the last 2 years. All right, we're coming back. Another hour of Sports Daily. Don't go away.
Now, from Wichita's most listened to sports radio, 97.5 and 1240 KFH, this is Sports Daily with Jacob Albrock and Tommy Gester.
All right, welcome back in, everybody, for another hour. Tim Fitzgerald coming up later this hour, and we will have a lot to talk about. This new college sports commission kind of weeding out the NCAA. There are pieces of that to talk about. One of the big stories that we have not touched on is a potential eviction type penalty from the conferences. Basically, like, the rules and the punishments are going to be so steep, they're going to incentivize following the rules. It sounds like, and we'll get into this in the next segment, we can dig in a little bit. Like, you can't sue over a penalty anymore. You can't, and if, like, you could be expelled basically from the league if you don't follow the rules. And that's an interesting component. So we'll get all that with Fitz later in the show. Something else we're going to talk about is K-State basketball adds another recruit. The news yesterday, Bowling Green transfer. He's a big man, which has a lot of terms that we're going to get into here. 6'7". He has got some girth, Tommy. He's well fed, like, whatever you want to call it, you know, the body type, right? Like, you know.
Yeah, he's hefty, I think was the word that you used yesterday.
Hefty. Yep. But I love it. I think, you know, we have seen some of my favorite players ever use that body type to their advantage to create space. And, you know, of course, Charles Barkley, as in his older years, probably more than his younger years, learned how to use that body type. We've seen Big Baby Davis in college master that body type. Queen for Maryland this past year used it well. This guy for Bowling Green uses it, and he averaged 16 points and 5 rebounds a game.
You're leaving off the guy that did it better than anybody else. Big Country, Bryant Reeves. You're leaving him off the list. I mean, come on. Like,
Big
there's
Country,
nobody better than him.
There have been a million of them. Larry Johnson had that type of my favorite basketball player of all time. Now, his was probably a little more muscle. But it was still that very broad, like, just large, imposing presence. I think K-State with that, and, you know, and a young Serbian player who has a style of, like, Nikola Jokic, like, K-State's cooking with something to be, and they're apparently in on PJ Haggerty. We'll get to all that with Fitz, but as we were talking about this guy yesterday, it brought up something that I think is fascinating, and that is, I think I called him a big guy. We were having a conversation and you said it brings up a pet peeve of yours. Now, I'll let you explain your pet peeve, because I'd have a different take on this.
I hate it. And I've always have. I mean, going all the way back to, like, when I was a teenager to now, I hate it when somebody calls me big guy. Like, it's the worst thing in the world. I would rather you call me like an expletive or like a dirty word or something than calling me big guy. I hate it when somebody's like, "Hey, big guy." I can't stand it. Like, it makes my skin crawl.
But why, though? Well, the why here is important.
Yeah. So I think it's because, you know, it's just a very veiled attempt, in my opinion, of, like, basically trying to call somebody a fat ass. And so, you know, it's like, it's basically being like, "Hey, fat ass," you know, but really, like, you're saying, "Hey, big guy." Like, it's just a nicer way of saying that.
Now, did you have the same body type growing up as you do now?
For the most part. I mean, I had a dad bod when I was 20. You know what I mean?
Gotcha.
Yeah.
Okay, yep. No, I do. So I don't think, but just so everybody is aware, if you're new to the program, like, nothing's off the table. We make fun of each other. Nobody gets their feelings hurt. Like, I've said before, and I mean it, like, I could get hit by a bus and Tommy could make fun of me tomorrow. We're good. Don't worry about it. So this is fascinating, though, because I don't know that I use that term specifically. I might. I am really bad, really bad at remembering names. Like, it's a problem. It's genetic. It runs in my family. I have learned later in life because I'm like, man, what? This is such a problem. If I met somebody and there wasn't like a, like, and we weren't in a meeting and it was in passing and it's very casual, I will forget that name. I'm not kidding. 2 seconds after, like, that happens to me and it's a real problem. So I oftentimes am a big proponent of, I forgot a name, so we're going to use all the generics. Big guy.
Yeah. There are names out there. Hey, buddy. I use buddy a lot. Hey, buddy. Hey, bro, hey, dude, hey, you know, what? But like, big guy, because then you're basically like,
but people call me big guy.
Yeah, but they call you big guy ironically because you're scrawny.
See, I don't think that's what it is. I think that is a generic term in passing. Whether somebody forgets a name or not, I think it's the same as buddy or dude or man. I think it's just one of those generics that has worked its way in. I don't think it's, and I, man, boy, I hope that not everybody thinks that, because I think back to like how I've bailed myself out of those situations. And I'm like, well, goodness, like what do people think I'm implying when it's like this panic moment for me of like, oh crap, what's
like,
that name?
I feel like if I called you big guy, hey, big guy, that's along the same lines of me calling my 4-year-old big guy, because you're both small, you know. But
I don't
like,
think you're saying it because we're small, are you?
It's ironic. It's an irony, like, hey, big guy, and you're not big at all. But when somebody has been big, you know, and I've lost weight over the years, which is good. But like, there is a period of time, you know, like, yeah, like I kind of struggled with that sort of thing. And if somebody was like, hey, big guy, to me, that was just like nails on a chalkboard. And I'm like, you know what? Screw you. Like, that is not like all. Now I'm self-conscious. And now you're thinking, I feel like you think I'm actually big. And so, yeah, maybe that's more on me than it is on the other person. Like, it's more of a self-conscious thing for me. It's along the same lines of calling somebody husky or chubby, you know, or whatever. Hey, chubby. Like, how would you feel like if you were, you know, overweight and you're like, hey, chubby, how you doing, bud?
I just got a text. Somebody is on my side of this.
I'm listener. Sure they are.
It's on big guy.
I'm
well,
sure
no,
they
it's because I'm afraid like that. It's wrong. Max, where do you stand with big guy? Do you think big guy is more literal or do you think it's more generic?
Max is not paying attention currently to
okay
to your question, but okay. he'll think about it.
I don't know why, but we're going to need help on this. And when we, because we got into this yesterday, I'm like, we got to save this because now I'm genuinely curious. So
I would love to know Tim Fitzgerald's take on this too. I feel like
we'll
need to
Tim,
ask him.
He's a big guy.
He's well, but I mean, be careful because like that's a,
he's a big guy. That and could a, be a hey, big guy.
That could be a touchy thing. You know, like I always want to be,
Fitz is like us. He's not going to get,
but you can't speak on that because you're not big. Like you've never been big.
No. I'm not trying to
you
give
can't
him,
say
I'm
whether
saying,
or not it's touchy. Like that's,
I'm saying he's not going to be offended. I don't know how he feels about that term. But we all make fun of each other all the time. And I do want to get Fitz's take on this. And I'm very glad that it got spurred on by a K-State player so that we can get Fitz's take on this, because he'll give it some good thought. But I want like, if you can leave us a video comment, I am so curious to know where people stand with this. Maybe I'll put up a Twitter poll in the break or something and we'll see if people can just help me know which way is which, because I've always thought of that as one of the generics, like one of the buddy, guy, man, dude. Like I've always thought of big guy that way. It's interesting to hear that you haven't, because now I'm like, oh, hell, like what have I done
and look,
potentially
the,
over the years?
Because
I have forgotten a million names.
The intent behind it, that may very well be the case. Like it's never intended in that way, right? But for the person receiving it, like I can only speak for myself in that regard. So I don't think that there's a right or wrong answer. Like you could put a Twitter poll up and people are going to be like, no, it's not a big deal, but it's an individual thing. Like
no,
that's always just bothered me. It's always bothered me when somebody's called me big guy.
I'm not trying to like, I just want to know what most people's intent is when they say it, not when they receive
it. I'm sure that the intent is usually pure from the majority of people. But I also know, like, I know for a fact there have been times that I've been called big guy and the intentions have not been pure. It's been It's been a dig.
Yeah,
it's been
I believe
condescending, hey, big guy, you know, and like clearly like you're calling me a fat ass.
No, they now, call you well, porky or something.
I'm going to use it. It'll be to get under your skin. Like I'm sure when you I will. Call you that, just to see how well you're paying attention.
I'm sure you will.
Because that's coming all the time now. So this was a fun one. I was so excited yesterday. I was like, oh man, this is going to be so good for the show. Cause I really want, sometimes those fall in your lap and I think we do a pretty good job of like just the everyday, like things that we wonder about that nobody ever really talks about. This felt like it was one of them. So, that's on the table for you this hour. So what we'll do is we'll come back here. I want to let's set the table a little bit because we have not talked at all. And I didn't see it until today. And I guess it's a 2 or 3 day old story from Yahoo about this potential penalty of college athletics of like taking this thing next level. And I got to say, like on the surface, I don't know that that's a bad idea. Like, if you really want people to follow the rules, you better make the penalty harsh enough to have them follow the rules. So we'll get into it. Give Tommy a chance to look at that. If he hasn't seen it, I'll dig in on it a little bit as well. And then we'll have Tim Fitzgerald talk about that. Talk about this K-State edition, this K-State class overall. They get a big guy to help them, I think, in an area they need help. I mean, he is. Well, in basketball,
he
big
is
guy,
a big,
big
guy.
Man.
He's a big
is
guy.
Is a different. That, and then it takes on a whole different level because that's an actual term for a specific position on the floor. But we'll have it as we make our way through a second hour of Sports Daily Nonsense. Stick with us.
Okay, take it easy. We're going on the air.
This is Sports Daily on KFH.
All right, welcome back, everybody, to Sports Daily. Thanks to Crestview Country Club for being a great sponsor of the program. It is golf season, Tommy. We're playing later this week. Memorial Day, I think I'm going to jump in to a game, a long-standing game that you have, and I appreciate that. I've got another round next week, and I'm talking 18 hole. I have 3 18 hole rounds coming over like 6 days. I don't know if I'm going to hold up physically. It's been a long time. I played 2.5 holes yesterday. That's usually about what I can get in there. This is going to be a stamina contest.
Get the icy hot ready to go. And you never know, your game could flourish. It could turn around.
Well, I got all the bogeys out of the way in that 2.5 holes I played yesterday. So you guys are toast tomorrow. You'll be proud of me. I got actual golf balls.
Good.
Yesterday. I didn't want to embarrass you in front of your friends Memorial Day.
I appreciate that.
So I got some ball. I looked it up. I was like, what kind of ball should I get for my game?
What'd you get?
And look. Wilson something.
Okay. Yeah. I mean, look, Wilson like it's something, as long as they're actual golf balls, I'm a happy camper.
Again. I've never hit a tennis ball on the golf course.
Did you know, by the way, that you can get like refurbished, refinished golf balls nice that are like, they're just used.
I have a certain reputation, I think, with you of saving money. And I will absolutely be doing that. I just want to figure out which ball it is that I like the most first. And then, yes, I'll be buying a hundred ball bucket of used, that kind of ball.
I've done that before. I mean, look, like they're good brands. Like they're better. Like we're talking Pro V1s and TaylorMades and Callaways, like good golf balls.
Well,
maybe they've been hit before. And like, I've done that. That's not a big deal.
In my research, the good news for me is the expensive ones aren't the kind I should be using anyway. So, like, which of the kind that lend itself to my game do I like? And then I will then go find, yes, the used version.
You need the softest golf ball, the ones that are most forgiving. That's probably what's going to be good for you.
I don't swing very hard.
Yeah.
That's the only way in my golf game that I learned probably a decade ago from, you know, to take it from like a 50 handicap down to a 20 was you better stop swinging hard because there's no chance that ball's going anywhere close to what. So I have learned that part. And then, so yes, it's like, okay, if I swing it slower, what should I use? And yeah, it was soft was the consistent answer that I got. So Wilson something or other that has a soft ball is what I found. There's also some like graffiti balls apparently that lend itself to that. So I might also try one of those just, you know, because it's a little more obnoxious and I appreciate that as well. And I heard they were easier to find, which is also something that would be good for me.
You also strike me as a Costco golf ball type guy, like a Kirkland brand.
I found one of those in the pond recently and I've been using it. It's fine. Like, I don't know if it's you know, better or worse. Oh, don't act like you don't skim the edge of the pond
to get a golf ball.
He would.
What's that, Max?
He would go wading in the pond.
I didn't go wading. It was kind of on the edge, and you could just kind of grab it with your club. You know, you get it, and you just like flick it out, and then you got a new ball, a new to you or new to me. But it was a Kirkland brand. Isn't that the Costco one?
It is
like a Kirkland one. So yeah, I mean, we used it. I love when my kids come too, because they like to do that. They like to go like rummaging for balls, and then, you know, then you got all these balls. So you can try out all kinds of different ones. And I did try that one, and I don't know if it's any better or worse, but it was all right. It's okay. But I did. They're new. Like, you'll be like, in the box. And the only time I ever use new balls is if I'm playing in an event and they give you balls. Like, that's the only time I ever use new balls. So we'll see how they work. If you're correct and they change my game entirely, you guys are toast tomorrow.
I don't know if it's going to change your game, but at least you can hold your head up high.
I'm more what?
At least you can hold your head up high.
Less embarrassing.
Yeah.
Man, I don't embarrass easily. If you don't know that by now, but we'll be good. So thanks to Crestview. Anyway, it'll be a lot of golf out there. Give them a call. Memorial Day pool party's coming. The pool. I don't know if you've seen the pool.
I have.
All the cabanas they put in. I think they just put a slide in. They put a basketball goal up. Did you see that? Because we're about to have beers and get a real game of pickup basketball.
I need the weather forecast to turn around a little bit for Monday. It looks a little chilly, a little cloudy, but yeah.
It'll be fine. It'll be all right. We'll get you a little liquid heater going before we get out there. We'll be in good shape. Okay, let's talk about. So I don't know if you had a chance during the break to look at this, Tommy, or maybe you've seen it before. I had not seen this until I was trying to prep up on this new college sports commission thing because I wanted to get Fitz's take on it. Something is happening here, and it's hard to follow because I think it came from Tennessee governor's, you know, like bill at the bottom. They're what it sounds like they're trying to do is set up a set of rules, like for whenever the house settlement comes and they determine like, okay, here is finally at least the groundworks of how this share and financial situation will play, putting in just some insanely restrictive rules and then the punishment for the rules. The document that's in question, and Ross Dellinger has this, it's described as an affiliation or membership agreement. So they're trying to come up, and this is what we've kind of wanted, right? We've wanted some enforcement to go to the conferences here. And what it sounds like is as the rules get set, and that probably happens by this new group that's basically the NCAA by a new name, right? This College Sports Commission or whatever. The enforcement of it or the penalties for breaking them could be so severe that in theory, like, you could get kicked out of the SEC. And I'm going to tell you right now, like, if they get to that point, and I don't think this is a bad idea, like, if you really want people to follow the rules and the, you know, the money that a university makes by being a member of the SEC through TV deals and all these things, there will be absolutely no appetite from the upper levels of these schools' administrators for any kind of rule breaking. And it will get self-enforced. Those things that you wanted the NCAA to enforce that they never could because it's impossible to legislate that many different schools, this would, I bet you, do it. Because there would be no room for anything close to breaking a rule. The financial component of it wouldn't be there. The financial component of cheating and paying players under the table for years has always been there because, oh no, you're going to take our banner, but you're not going to take away the ticket sales we had for the last 3 years because that player sold out, you know, facilities. It's a good idea. I think on the surface, it's a good idea.
I'll believe it when I see it. And it's not that I don't think that these conferences can actually enforce it. I just have such a bad taste in my mouth from the way that the NCAA tried to do enforcement and that they were incapable and inept and all the different things and actually enforcing the right things and, you know, not going after things that were trivial and didn't matter. So that's the only context that any of us have, that we only have the context in the ways that the NCAA tried to dole out punishment and enforce rules and how arbitrary it was and how long it took to get things done. And like, I can't think of off the top of my head, any punishments that the NCAA doled out that I agreed with, you know, that I'm like, yeah, that was the right thing to do. That was the right way to pursue this. Or like, if, even if it was the right decision, yeah, they did that in a speedy way. They were able to get it done in a good timeline. Like there was nothing about enforcement from the NCAA that I feel like was effective whatsoever. So knowing that's the only context that any of us have, I'll believe it when I see it from the different conferences and the way that this enforcement is lined out. On paper, in theory, it's a good idea. I don't disagree with you. But until I actually see it in action and actually working, I can't like fully endorse it and get behind it and say, yep, I'm on board with this, because I have no context to know whether or not it's actually going to work and be effective.
The most challenging part will be to get schools to sign off, right? To get schools to agree to this, because the schools losing the ability to sue over a punishment there's not a lawyer on the planet that would say, yeah, that's a good idea. Do that.
But would it be challenging though? Because like all you need are the conferences on board. I mean, do you think that an SEC member school is going to say, yeah, we're not signing that? Like, absolutely. They would.
Yeah. Because they all have to agree to make that a thing, right? They all have to agree to like, kind of like the tush push vote. Like you'd have to get all the, whoever the presidents or whoever, you'd have to get them together and say, here's what we're proposing. Let's vote on it. And then you'd have to get a majority vote, I assume this, by the way, to come in and then do that. So that seems like the biggest hurdle. I don't think there are in today's world. And I would be speaking to this now as like a business owner. You almost never want to give up the right to take something to court if there's a grievance. Like that's a, like the bigger power would always want you to, and sometimes can force you to, but you don't want to. So there would have to be a pretty compelling case, I think, that this would be actually good for the schools to do it. Now, I don't know then if it can go, because remember, this is the Tennessee governor looking at this. I don't know if there's some type of law that could go into place to not give you a choice. Much like you've probably seen in the headlines, in the news, pharmaceutical companies kind of can't be sued. That was a law put in place. Is it Reagan that did that? And the spirit of it was so that they could be unhindered in their research to be aggressive and all these things. And now it's been abused, I think, over the years, and we've seen that. So maybe that's the part to watch, too, is that this is coming from a potential, you know, legislative place where they can say, nope, this is actually going to be a law. Like, you can't XYZ, that would probably be different. So there's nothing like concrete in any of this, but I think the idea of it, if you want, once these rules are set, people to actually follow them, that would be a way to do it for sure, because nobody would break the rules. No, you'd be idiotic to break the rules if that was the potential penalty.
And knowing that they're firm and sweeping and, you know, whatever those penalties are, I mean, think about like the frame of reference I have would be like when the Saints had Bounty Gate in the NFL and Sean Payton was suspended for the entire season once that was uncovered and all of that. I mean, that was something that was so sweeping and severe. If you've got punishments like that and not punishing the athletes necessarily, that's what the NCAA has always done. Like that's what they've always looked at. But really from an institutional perspective, a conference perspective, allowing them to govern themselves, I do think it's an intriguing idea and probably not a bad idea. I just would need to see it in action before I can fully endorse it.
It's something. It could be a big – all of this is – it feels like we're right on the edge of monumental shifts. And I think – you know, two more seasons from now, this will all be very different. All right, Tony, you said you have news regarding the American Athletic Conference.
Yeah, I do. So you mentioned kind of on the edge of some monumental changes in college athletics. A new article just came out from the Sports Business Journal. Ben Portnoy is the journalist who wrote this article, came out just a few minutes ago, that the American Athletic Conference is going to be rolling up all of their sponsorship business under the actual conference's authority. So like Learfield has handled their sponsorship sales for a long time. They are not renewing a deal with Learfield once it's up this year. They will handle all of their business operations, sponsorship sales, all of that in-house. And they've hired a chief commercial officer who previously was part of the Professional Fighters League, and he'll be going to find conference sponsorships, things like that, as opposed to having an outside entity do that moving forward. And so Tim Pernetti, the commissioner of the American, told the Sports Business Journal that basically they want to roll up the conference's commercial business interests into a single entity under the umbrella of the actual conference.
Huh. Well, that's interesting. So the conference would then leave those things like – so
the conference would do it themselves. So basically, Pernetti and his quote was, bringing all the commercial business together in one division gives us the ability to scale things across the conference more effectively, whether that's conference naming rights, playing surfaces, jersey patches, or any of those things. It gives us the ability to create more value for the sum of our parts. And the new division of the conference is an acronym called RISE. And that stands for Revenue, Innovation, Sports, and Entertainment. And that's a new division as part of the conference itself.
I don't know. Your take on this will be better. So for people right now, Learfield is this massive entity. And you've heard it on K-State broadcasts here, like Learfield Sports, right? They do this for a lot of schools across the country. Wichita State is not one of those schools. Wichita State has independently handled that stuff in-house forever. That's how you've heard on Shocker broadcast here, Shocker Sports Properties, right? Like that's two totally different things, two totally different models, two totally different dynamics. I wonder then, Wichita State, the team in the American, how it affects the Shocker athletic program and how it does its business, because it's never been a part of Learfield. It's always operated independently. Are they still allowed to conduct their own business then?
I don't know. I mean, I would imagine that there will be probably clear guidelines on what you can and can't do as a member institution, what you can and cannot sell, and what is an institution's responsibility and what is a conference's responsibility. So like, you know, Pernetti is talking about things like jersey patches. If that's going to be under the umbrella of the conference to sell, and you've got one presenting sponsor, and then you basically divvy it up among the member schools, well, then each individual school wouldn't be responsible in going and selling that themselves. It's a mixed bag. I mean, I can see it kind of a double-edged sword. Like,
yeah,
you know, because like I know, and Wichita State's not the only school that's this way. I'm sure that they've got limitations as far as man hours and manpower to go out
and sell things.
Right. You know, so if you're doing it and trying to get value from a conference perspective, you can probably get more money out of it and take that burden off of the individual schools, as long as those schools are getting the fair value of what it is that's being sold.
Well, and then you have to like, so as a business owner, as a client, then, and something like that. And this is, we won't spend too much time on this. This is interesting though. Like, why would I want any piece of Temple, right? I wouldn't want that. I don't care. Like, that's not value to me. Like, that doesn't add value. There has to be a way for them to divvy out portions of this to these schools locally to have some freedom and some complexity in what they can do.
And by the way, do you know what the major play is with all of this long term? And even Tim Pernetti reference this in the article. It's to get appropriate valuations for the conference to go and get private equity partners to invest in the conference. That's the whole long-term play in all of this. And the American's not the only conference doing this. Like, there are other conferences that are working on trying to find a way to value their conference enough to go and get big money hedge funds, private equity, whatever that looks like, to invest in the conference as a, you know, to try to get a return on that.
A concept, by the way, that we brought up probably 2 years ago now that was, look, some things, if you really look, like, you can see it coming from a mile away. That one has felt inevitable, right? Because there's so much money involved in this. That one's felt inevitable. Whether that's a good or a bad thing, time will tell. And that this all, it's all interesting because it all sort of weaves itself together, right? Enforcement rules. How does the revenue share work? How are schools ever going to afford a revenue share? That answer to me has always been private equity partnerships. How is Florida State going to break a TV contract to go make more money somewhere else? They're going to need somebody to help them break that TV contract for a return on their investment later. Correct. Down the road. Like, all of that stuff is interesting, probably a little more interesting to us maybe than the general public, but it all does go together, and it's interesting. That one obviously affects Wichita State. We'll have Kevin Saul in a couple of weeks. We can ask him. Maybe they'll have more, you know, information on it.
And now, digging deeper with the teams you follow, it's another Sports Daily Insider interview on KFH.
All right, welcome back in, everybody, to Sports Daily. We do have Tim Fitzgerald, our K-State insider. We're going to go wide-ranging today with Fitz.
Oh, boy.
We got to get the take on the new player there for K-State, Marcus Johnson. We got to get his take on some of this college sports commission, some of the things we were just talking about, and potential, like, expulsion-type enforcement some leagues are looking at. Before we do any of that, though, Fitz, again, we always have to put a disclaimer on these kinds of conversations. Tommy and I, Fitz, I believe, I won't speak for you, I'll let you answer yourself, do not easily come offended or get your feelings hurt about just about anything. So this came up with us yesterday, Fitz, as a point of talking about Marcus Johnson. We all noticed the first thing we noticed about Marcus Johnson is that he's a big guy, right? He's a big fella. But so here's where our conversation quickly evolved. So when Tommy and I are talking about it, I'm like, oh man, I love this kind of player, right? The dudes that are just big and broad and can use their body, like, they're fun to watch, all these things. And Tommy brought up something that had me, because he brought up that he doesn't like when people call him big guy in passing, because it's a veiled attempt to make fun or call him fat. And I'm like, man, I don't agree. People call me big guy and I'm scrawny as hell. I would contend that big guy is a more generic somebody like me who forgets names easily, uses it as a crutch, like, dude, man, buddy. Big guy to me falls there as somebody who might have been on the receiving end of a, hey, big guy. Where do you fall on that?
Well, let me just back up. And Tommy, I'm sorry, he's fat. As a fat person, I'm not offended by that. I'm overweight.
But do you think somebody, when they call you big guy, is calling you big guy because that, or because it's just a generic term we use when we maybe don't know a name, or just in passing, it's just a generic greeting?
I'm a big guy. I'm 6'3", or used to be, and shrinking, but yeah, I get called that.
I mean, look,
called Big Mike.
I feel like I feel like if I called Jacob Big Guy, I mean, he's 140 pounds dripping wet. You know, it's ironic. Like, that's an ironic thing to call him Big Guy. If somebody calls me Big Guy, it's because they think I'm fat, you know? And I'm like, and maybe I am, maybe I'm not, but I don't necessarily want somebody pointing that out to me, especially somebody I don't know who I'm meeting for the first time. And they're like, hey, Big Guy. You know, I'm like, you don't know me. You don't have the right to call me big guy. That's always bothered me. Always bothered me when somebody calls me big guy.
I can see your point on that. It doesn't, because you're not a big guy.
Right.
You're not. But I think the conversation changes, though, when it's an athlete, because,
oh yeah,
you know, I think There's no doubt.
He's a big guy. Yeah, he's a big man.
He's a big man. Heck, he's a big man in basketball. Yeah, like that's totally
on
fine.
Basketball court is
but
a
you,
big
but
man.
See, Jacob, you called originally where it started. You called him hefty, and
well,
that's even worse. Like you know, so like. That'd be even worse if somebody was like, "Hey, hey, you're hefty, or you're chubby, or
yeah,
you're."
That would be a little. But if I here's what like if I now I'm going to of course do this all the time is call Tommy big guy, but because I know it bothers him. But had I not known that, and we walked into a room, and I it, like that one's not in my lexicon. But if I was like, "Hey, big guy," that I would not have been saying that for that reason. I literally would have just said that as a generic introduction. Like that's how I would use that word. So I'm fascinated by it. I want to know where people stand on this because like I want to know where the intent is if nothing else.
Yeah. I see both sides of this and I'm not as impassioned about this as you guys because I did a whole video making fun of his size.
That's why we knew you'd
how much
perfect.
I love it.
So I knew we knew you'd be the perfect person because you're like us and you know, no jokes off the table. So he is a big guy, both in position and in stature, and that will make him easy to fall in love with as a player if he's good. If he's scoring 16 points and 5 rebounds a game at K-State, he'll become a fan favorite real quick.
Yep.
I don't know how much you've been able to read up on him, study up on him. Do you think his game translates up? I know he had a good game against Michigan State. That kind of came out with the announcement. But does it translate into the Big 12? How much of it? Because this is a position of need for K-State. It absolutely is.
Well, he's a perimeter player. He's 6'7", and excuse me, and I don't know how many pounds, but 50% of his shots are from three.
Oh, wow.
And he is a perimeter player. My questions about him have nothing to do with his offense. I worry about his ability to rebound and defend at this level. And also, I think he's going to struggle to get that shot off at a higher level because defenses are more attentive at this, you know, at the Big 12. They're not just going to let you stand out there and shoot threes. They're going to be on you. He's a really intriguing player. I'll be very interested to see how it does translate to the Big 12 because he's not just a shooter. He's one of those guys that can score from different angles, shooting fadeaway threes. And he's just a natural scorer and snacker apparently. he's going to be a fan favorite no matter what. He really will be because we're not talking about, you know, a Thomas Gibson or even a Luis Colon, or back in the day, a Fred McCoy, who were just big guys. They were just thick. I mean, they weren't necessarily fat. They were just portly.
Stout. I think stout would be a good word.
Yes, stout. Yeah. Come on, this dude's fat. Husky. I mean, he's got a gut. I've never seen anything like it, but he's one of those dudes. You ever seen a really big guy go like start dancing and you're like, holy crap, he's nimble and he can do backflips. And that's what this guy does on the basketball court. You're like, how is he doing this? He looks like he's out of shape and yet he's a really good athlete. So I'm fascinated to see how it translates to the Big 12. And he won't average 16 points at this level. He'll be more of a role player. But that'll be dependent on his ability to defend at this level, which is a big question for me.
With his addition to the team and to the roster, what's left? What are the priorities remaining for Jerome Tang?
Well, you know what? I haven't done I need to do a head count. They still got some slots. They really need a still kind of need an alpha scorer. They got some guys that can score, but they also need someone they can lean on. I think they need a true point. There's an ongoing discussion on our message boards about whether they're going to this, you know, positionless type of play. I don't know why you would when you had your greatest success with a true point guard in Marquise Noel. But we'll see how this all shakes out. They've got more work to do, though, guys. They got a lot more work, and guys bouncing back out of the draft are certainly a priority. And they're still recruiting a couple guys over in Germany. So we'll see if that pans out.
It'll be the international flair to this is going to be fascinating too. Mm-hmm. All right, Fitz, let's switch gears a little bit. There has been a lot of stuff with college athletics, this College Sports Commission, which is basically going to be the NCAA by a new name, and maybe it's better, I don't know. But then I'm seeing also stuff about potential punishments being fished out there by the Tennessee governor, of like expulsions from leagues if you're not following the rules, whenever it is that we get what the rules actually are, and not being able to, you know, sue in court and all these different kinds of things. There's a lot of little things moving around right now with college athletics. Or do you feel like this is taking us to a better place, big picture?
No, it's not. Because until they have some assistance from the federal government in leveling this playing field, and maybe antitrust and some collective bargaining with a players' union, it's not going to be settled. But number one, Tennessee, shut up. What are you doing? Passing a law that your schools don't have to follow the House settlement and can do whatever they want to do. I mean, that is such SEC behavior. I can't believe it. We're above this. We're above everyone else. We don't have to follow this. Even though, you know, the NCAA is negotiating and they're part of the NCAA. However, this, whatever it is being passed around, this pledge that everyone would have to sign, you'd be kicked out of a conference if you don't follow the rules that they establish, has no teeth to it. It just takes one lawyer to get this thrown out. It's not sustainable. It's ridiculous. It's a waste of time. But at least they're trying to show they're doing something. I think maybe they're virtue signaling a little bit to their fan bases that we're trying. But in all honesty, until you get government intervention to give you a framework of rules and security for the organization, you're not going to go anywhere with any of this.
I think there's too many different things yet to make much about it. Do you think a smaller, what they call more nimbler, College Sports Commission could be a more effective rules agency whenever that happens than the NCAA has been? You think it's even possible?
Yeah, I do think they probably need a football, you know, major college power level, or even the, you know, an FBS level commissioner of football in some way. That isn't an ex-coach like Nick Saban.
Right, it's not, and it doesn't sound like it's going to be as much as his name gets brought up.
Yeah, and look, it's, you know, part of the problem here, well, the problem here is the courts are saying the student-athletes have no voice in any of this. And you're just passing rules that affect them, and in some cases, in name, image, and likeness, their rights. You don't sign a guy to a scholarship and then own his face. You know, it's like, it was absurd. And until they allow the student-athletes to be part of this, this isn't going to go anywhere. They've got to open this up to all parties involved in these transactions and get some congressional, you know, put some stuff in cement that this is the way it goes. You're free of antitrust challenges, and now you're going to be dealing with collective bargaining with a player union. That's just the way it's got to be. That's the only way out of this, and they seem to be trying everything but that.
Yeah, it's baby steps. And at the very beginning, Tim Fitzgerald, our K-State insider, gopowercat.com. They'll have all the content you need on the newest Wildcat, Marcus Johnson, his body type, and what he might be able to do at K-State for Jerome Tang. Fitz, we're right up against it. We appreciate it. We'll see you next time, big guy.
Okay, you bet.
Chris Fitz. All right, that's it. Fun Sports Daily today. A lot of fun things happening in a week where things are slowing down just a little bit. Royals day off today. We'll be back to look ahead to that Minnesota series tomorrow. We'll have Jalen Thompson in to talk Royals tomorrow to help us do it. So a lot of fun things coming. Giveaways, more stuff. Tommy, enjoy a Thursday.
Yeah, appreciate it. Getting ready for the holiday weekend. We'll have a big show tomorrow.
All right, for Max, for Tommy, thanks to Tim Fitzgerald. You can go back and listen on the Odyssey app anytime. I'm Jacob Albrecht. We'll see you tomorrow.
At Designer Shoe Warehouse, we believe that shoes are an important part of, well,
everything. From first steps to first dates, from all-nighters to all-time personal bests.
From building pillow forts to building a life.
For all the big and small moments that make up your whole world, DSW is there. And we've got just the shoes. Find a shoe for every you from brands you love at bragworthy prices at your DSW store or DSW.com.
Question for our listeners. Which automaker assembles the most vehicles in the country? Here's a hint. It's the same one that employs the most hourly workers in the country, and the answer is Ford. That's not a coincidence. It's a commitment. A commitment your local Ford stores share. And that is why Ford is now offering employee pricing across their full lineup of vehicles, which means you pay what they pay. So visit your local Ford stores today to take advantage of this great opportunity. Ford Motor Company, from America for America.
Going up.
Prices keep going up these days. It feels like being on an elevator that only goes up.
Going up.
But not at Metro. We're pushing the down button.
Going down.
We've lowered prices. Get one line of 5G data for $40, period. That's 20% lower. And you get a free Samsung 5G phone when you bring your number. Only at Metro.
5-year guarantee on eligible plans. Exclusions apply. See website for details. Not available at Metro with T-Mobile in the past 6 months. Tax applies.
Question for our listeners. Which automaker assembles the most vehicles in the country? Here's a hint. It's the same one that employs the most hourly workers in the country, and the answer is Ford. That's not a coincidence. It's a commitment. A commitment your local Ford stores share. And that is why Ford is now offering employee pricing across their full lineup of vehicles, which means you pay what they pay. So visit your local Ford stores today to take advantage of this great opportunity. Ford Motor Company, from America for America.
Going up.
Prices keep going up these days. It feels like being on an elevator that only goes up.
Going up.
But not at Metro. We're pushing the down button.
Going down.
We've lowered prices. Get one line of 5G data for $40, period. That's 20% lower. And you get a free Samsung 5G phone when you bring your number. Only at Metro.
5-year guarantee on eligible plans. Exclusions apply. See website for details. Not available at Metro with T-Mobile in the past 6 months. Tax applies.